So, eventually.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Rico Bronya Drive Home Edition. Oh, what a night at Citi Field, the night of the NBA draft, the night where I didn't get what I wanted as a Brooklyn Net fan. I'm not going to crap on Mykal Brown. I'm just going to say I wanted Darius Akhaf Jr., and I didn't get what I wanted. And everyone else who showed up at Citi Field, we also didn't get what we wanted. Because we actually wanted to see, dare I say, a competitive start, dare I say, a respectable start from a major league starting pitcher. And instead, we got the garbage known as Kodai Senga. Kodai Senga is somebody that I have liked. Now it's starting again. I'm so confused. Welcome to Rico Bronya. My name is Evan Roberts. The New York Mets put together a dreadful, disgusting performance. I'm sorry, I didn't want to run somebody over. And of course, we got the misdirection of the police officer saying go and people continuing to walk. Welcome to a drive home edition of the Rico Bronya. I'm Evan Roberts. The Mets suck. I'll give you 5 seconds on the Brooklyn Nets draft, which me and Jet watched live at Citi Field. I don't want to crap on Mykal Brown because honestly, I hope Mykal Brown turns out to be a superstar player that we wear the jersey of for the next 15 years and leads us to the promised land. I just happen to want Darius Akhaf Jr. I fell in love with Darius Akhaf Jr. I believed he was the guy to take. Sean Marks disagrees with me. I hope I'm wrong. Now let's get to the garbage Mets. Kodai Senga is somebody that when they signed him from Japan, I had high hopes for. He had a very good year in 2023, a year that did not feature many good things. Obviously, 2024 was a wasted season. And last year, because of a miscue by our former first baseman, Kodai Senga got hurt. And when he came back, he was never the same. I have no idea what's going on this year with Kodai Senga, but the time has come. He cannot pitch anymore. He cannot be on the mound every 5 days anymore. I understand the Mets don't have a lot of options because the brilliant David Stearns did not exactly build the deepest of rotations. But what we saw at Citi Field on Tuesday night in front of friends and family, because that's the people that showed up and stayed, was another uncompetitive mess of a performance. And look, in the first inning, did he give us some hope? Sure. In the first inning, Kodai Senga actually pitched I think it was a 1-2-3 inning, including striking out the third hitter he faced in Michael Bush. And I think Jed even said to me, didn't you say, is he pitching a perfect game? Yeah. In the first inning. And I said, yes, he is, Jed, but I'll give you $1,000, $1,000 in cash if Kodai Senga pitches a no-hitter or perfect game. And no, I am not giving my son any money other than love because what we saw in the second inning from Kodai Senga was again a non-competitive mess. And he even gives you the tease. You know, he commits the bases loaded walk, he gives up the line drive sacrifice fly to Dansby Swanson. And so Senga has a chance to get through that rocky second inning, keeping it at 2-0, keeping it a competitive game. And of course, he gives up the massive blow to Pete Crow Armstrong to make it 5-0. But wait, Even when the Mets respond in the bottom of the second inning with that very impressive two-out rally that got capped off by Francisco Alvarez's two-run single, to at least make it a baseball game, to at least make your Tuesday night somewhat competitive, an inning and a half later, here's Kodai Senga again, taking a game and lighting it on fire. And so here's the deal. I don't care if it's Jack Weininger. I don't care if it's, I mean, I do care if it's Jonah Tong because he's struggling in the minor leagues. You know what? I don't care if it's Tobias Myers, as mediocre as he was yet again. It actually doesn't even matter. It's that Kodai Senga can't start anymore. And what are the options? I mean, you want to fake IL him again? You want to ask him to go to the minor leagues? In fact, here's what I would do. I would go to Kodai Senga and I would say, Kodai, we would like to send you to the minor leagues. When are you coming back? I have no idea. You may never come back. I don't know. If Kodai Senga, who has the language in his contract to not go to the minor leagues, to say no thank you, if he says no thank you, then you've got no other option but to release him. Because this can't happen. He's got an ERA of 11. The Mets are trying to win baseball games. They're unsuccessful at it, but they're trying. This cannot continue. And again, I say this as somebody who has been, I don't want to say I am currently, I have been a Kodai Senga supporter. Jet was even wearing his Kodai Senga jersey. That will live in the Vernon Golston era, the Blake Griffin era of jerseys, ones that you look at and say, is that the answer to a trivia question? The point is, for anyone who was in the building on this magnificent Tuesday night, the beginning of the Mikael Brown era in Brooklyn, we can no longer watch Kodai Senga pitch. It cannot happen. This game was thrown away because of yet another short and horrible start by a Mets starting pitcher. And look, this offense, it wasn't exactly great tonight. I'll get to some thoughts on that in a few minutes. But when you don't have a great offense, which clearly this isn't, and you lose Juan Soto to a back issue, you can't have your starting pitcher go, what was it, 3 1/3 innings, 7 runs? I mean, that cannot happen. And there needs to be consequences. Again, I'm not enamored with the other options that they have. Tobias Myers has been pretty bad over his last how many appearances dating back to his minor league trip. Jonah Tong isn't pitching well in the minor leagues. I get all that. Jack Weininger may not be ready. I would actually tell you, and I very rarely do this, it doesn't actually matter who replaces Kodai Senga. I just know he can't pitch anymore. So here's my solution. You go to him, you say, we want to send you down to the minor leagues. If he says no, you give him his walking papers and he's gone. That's number one. Number two, this was, I hate to pick on Bo Bichette, but I'm going to pick on Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette comes up in that second inning when the Mets are putting together the rally. They're down 5-0. They two outs and nobody on, which is, kind of a thing sometimes with this offense. They put together this nice bottom of the order rally that features a Francisco Alvarez two-run single, a Carson Bench walk, and here comes Bo Bichette with the tying run on base. He's the lead run up at the plate against a very much struggling Edward Cabrera. And Bo Bichette gives you that crap at bat. And then, of course, 6 innings later, when the game is very much well decided, he hits an absolutely meaningless Fugazi fake comeback two-run home run to right field. I get when he comes to the plate in a 9-4 game, what's he supposed to do? Of course, he's going to try. I'm not blaming him for trying. I guess I'm just still pissed off that when he came up in the second inning with a chance to chase Edward Cabrera and really change the complexion of this entire game, it wasn't going to change the way Kodai Senga was going to pitch, but who knows? Maybe the Mets win this game 11-9. You're allowed to win games sometimes when your starting pitching is garbage. Bo Bichette gives you that horrific at bat. And the Met offense does really nothing after that. They let Edward Cabrera off the hook multiple times, including in that last inning in which he unfortunately got hurt. And it looks very, very bad. I'm not sure we're going to see him again as he got carted off. But I think it was Jared Young, who is slow as molasses. Two plays in this game where Jared Young can't beat out infield hits, including that last one in the fifth inning. But your starting pitching puts you in this horrible spot. I mean, I don't mean to pick on everybody on offense, even though they deserve it, because they did nothing until the ninth inning and the game was completely out of reach. But Kodai Senga put them in a horrible spot, and the offense did nothing. And then obviously you get the Juan Soto injury. He's dealing with a back issue. I don't even know what to say. I mean, it feels like Juan has had a million different injuries this season. To his credit, he has performed. I know that the clutch hasn't been there, and he's missed that big hit. There's been a few moments like that this season. But you look at his numbers, he's having a very productive season. When they flashed up the vote for the Mets All-Star Game ads, Jed even asked me, who's going to the All-Star Game for the New York Mets? And I said, I mean, it's Juan Soto. There's really nobody else who deserves that nod. Hopefully he's okay. The timing of it could not be worse. And the reason I say it could not be worse is the season, while the season has probably been over for months, I think I called the dead body many times early. You still hang in there hoping that things change. But when you're 10 games under 500, which they now are, and they are a loss away from dropping to their low watermark of the season at 11 games under 500, they have a doubleheader coming up. Soto, who knows? I mean, I don't know if Juan Soto's playing in any of these games. This is an absolute teetering moment for the New York Mets. Now, I don't think we're going to remember this series or this doubleheader necessarily as the death of the season, because I think all of us have come to different conclusions on when this season actually died. But as fans, especially if you're still checking out the Rico Bronya, you're clearly a diehard fan. I don't know why else you're hanging out with us. We appreciate it, but you're a diehard, which means you're sick and twisted, which means that even when you're unhappy with who your Australian general manager picks, you hope that you're wrong. Oh, did I start talking Nets again? I apologize. The point is, they are now 10 games under 500. They are facing a doubleheader, three more games in this series, and then games against the Phillies, who just whipped their ass down in Philadelphia. Soto has a back issue. Even if Lindor is activated in 30 seconds, God knows what he's going to be, fresh off the injured list. This is an absolute teetering moment for this season. Because when you're 8 games under 500, 7 games under 500, 9 games under 500, and you're 5 and 6 games out of a wild card spot, you could at least convince yourself time-wise, well, they can still get hot. If you drop to 13, 14, 15, early July, I mean, wrap the body up. This thing is over. So hopefully Juan Soto can fight through this, but he leaves with a back issue, and then the following day they get 2 games. I mean, there's a damn good chance Soto isn't going to play. How weird is Mark Vientos, though? Mark Vientos is the guy who replaces Soto. He comes in to play first base. Jared Young moves to left field. And Mark Vientos gave us the full experience in this game because his at-bat, his first at-bat, in which he used the challenge correctly, it was an 0-2 pitch. He challenged it. It's called a ball. He puts together this really good at-bat and draws a walk. Kudos to Vientos. I think that was the sequence right before Jared Young grounded out and Edward Cabrera got incredibly hurt. But you see an at-bat like that from Mark Vientos, and then you see the crap that ended the game in the 9th inning, in which he gives you that non-competitive wave. That's what's so infuriating about Mark Vientos. Overall, his numbers suck. Overall, I think we all agree that the idea that Mark Vientos is ever going to become the guy from 2024 is long gone. But he will still give you these at-bats that encourage you, these at-bats that make you think, okay, it's still in there. And then you get the just atrocious at-bat in the 9th inning. Now, let me get to the play that confused me and confused all of us if you were still hanging in there. It took me, and maybe my brain wasn't where it needs to be, distracted by the Nets and the NBA draft and all that. But on the walk and the challenge by Carlos Mendoza. So basically, there's a runner on first base and one out. Pico Armstrong's the runner at first base. He's running on a 3-2 pitch. It's called a ball. It's clearly a ball. Alvarez throws down, which he should, because one thing we learned throughout this new ABS world is that you've got to play it through. Because if you challenge it and it's overturned into a strike, you got to play through any attempt to throw a base runner out at second base. So he throws to second base. It looks like Pico Armstrong is out, but it's called a walk. It's called a ball. There is no challenge by Alvarez, and Mendy comes out to argue and say, I want to challenge the caught stealing. I got to tell you, I have never been this confused. Because I keep repeating out loud to Jet, I'm like, he walked. What are they challenging? And the umpire never did a good job of explaining what I figured out. And I'm sure you guys knew, because I would assume before checking out or rechecking out the SNY broadcast, they were probably all over it. But it took me about 3 minutes to say, are they thinking he overslid the bag? Are they thinking, yes, it's ball four. Yes, you automatically get second base. But if Pete Crow Armstrong overslides second and is tagged out, he is considered leaving second base. It is not a dead ball. Like, this isn't a hit batsman. You can, you know, technically, Pete Crow Armstrong could have gone first to third on a walk. So let's get that out of the way. It's clearly not a dead ball. But it took me, I'd say, 2 minutes until finally, like, the light bulb went off. It certainly wasn't explained by the umpire who's got the microphone. It was just, oh, wow, I think they're challenging the overslide. So in this dark moment where Carlos Mendoza is a fool and everything he does is dumb, I got to give him a lot of credit. And obviously the guy who does the challenges, I forget his name right now, because that's a really good challenge. It's forgettable because the Mets were getting blown out and it was the eighth inning or the seventh inning. I think it was the eighth inning or the ninth inning, now that I think about it. But they got it right because Pete Crow Armstrong was not only out technically, if it was a strike, he was out getting to second, but his hand came off the bag. And since he's considered safe and his arm came off the bag, or not considered safe, considering he got the second on the walk and now his hand comes off the bag, it's one of those things where technically he is out and the umpire's got it right and Carlos Mendoza got it right. I think it's a little bit, I don't know, not in the spirit of the rule, but as long as we're going to have replay, these things are going to happen. So a weird moment in this game. This game featured a few weird moments. You got the Edward Cabrera brutal injury. You've got that weird caught stealing, not caught stealing. I even got to check what that's officially scored as, because he's not caught stealing 2-6 out at second. He's caught stealing 2-6, I guess, passing second base. Very weird play. But overall, what a horrible night. What a just terrible, terrible night. If you are a Met fan and you are hanging in there, God bless you. This is a very, very dark time. I found myself in the later innings looking at this team, and for the first time, because I haven't done this season, but for the first time, really starting to think about who should be sold off at the trade deadline and even starting to think about what this roster should look like next season. Because this is a bad team, and I know they've been a bad team for a while, and I've called it a lost season for a while, but you continue to watch and you continue to hope. And I think this three-game losing streak, with the horrible starting pitching that they've gotten over the last three games from Freddy Peralta, David Peterson, and Kodai Senga, it's just a reminder they're not good at anything. This lineup is not very good. Obviously, injuries have played a part of it, but it is not the reason. I think this is a horribly built team. And I did watch and listen to the David Stearns press conference, which we have stopped doing. Rico's analyzing what he has to say because he's not saying anything. Like, basically, the gist I got from David Stearns for 15 minutes is, yeah, we got a lot of really good players and they need to be better. And I'm so sick of hearing that because it's almost like an excuse. No, you built a bad team. Like, at some point, there needs to be accountability on that. You built a bad team. This is your fault. The crap we're watching every single day is on you. So I know that David Stearns is technically right when he says we don't have to pick a direction until August 3rd because that's the trade deadline. And he's right. You're not making any trades necessarily in late June or even early July. But I think it is certainly becoming obvious that this team is going nowhere. So in the meantime, Kodai Senga needs to be out of the rotation. It sucks because so does David Peterson. Like, honestly, if we're talking about performance and who deserves to be there, look, Nolan McLean should be in the rotation. As bad as Freddy Peralta's last start was, he should obviously remain in the rotation. Sean Manaea has pitched reasonably well since entering the rotation. But David Peterson and Kodai Senga are major problems. And it's not like Tobias Myers is taking advantage of his opportunity when he's pitched out of the bullpen or he's had his weird opening starts. They don't have a lot of great options, but there comes a point where you just can't put these guys out every 5 days. David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza both said they're evaluating the rotation on a start-by-start basis. Well, after what we saw, not just on Tuesday night against Chicago, but on Kodai Senga's previous start, I don't know how after two starts, I don't know how you can run him out there again. I think it's just truly impossible to do it. The one positive was Francisco Alvarez. He obviously gets the two-run single in the second inning that got them back in the game. He hits the bomb of a home run. Fantastic. You know, I think the problem with Alvarez, and I hope he stays healthy, and I hope he has a huge second half and gives us at least some confidence in him. The problem with Francisco Alvarez is twofold. Number one, he's so incredibly streaky. But number two, it is late June. Can Alvarez survive the rest of the year without going on the IL? Like, if we're looking for little victories between now and the end of this loss season, can Francisco Alvarez just avoid an IL stint? Just go out there and play every day. That's what we're looking for. But here we are teetering, 10 games under 500, three more games against the Cubs. The tiebreaker against Chicago is officially gone. I kind of chuckled by even bringing it up, but it is a thing. Now it's gone. They're 0-4 against the Chicago Cubs. So even if they win the final three games of this series, it is a completely lost cause. And it's a completely lost cause at Citi Field. If you went to the game, if you're hanging in there, God bless you. But right now it is dark, dark, dark times. And for anybody who bitches or mocks the fact that the Mets play fireworks or they do the light show in the sixth inning when they're getting blown out, this was a boring game. This was a bad game. And I don't know if Jet is still up. Are you sleeping, Jet? Yeah, he's out. But the most exciting part of this game was probably the light show in the bottom of the sixth inning. So for anyone who asks why, or that's pathetic, or it's so Mets, the 9-year-old who's sitting through this garbage baseball, they say that's the most entertaining thing. Anyhow, we hope you enjoyed this depressing drive-home edition of the Rico. The Mets lose 9-6, but the game was certainly not that close as they add on those Fugazi runs in the last few innings. They've now lost three in a row. They've dropped to 10 games under 500. And away we go, a split admission doubleheader, which is such a spit in the face. A split admission doubleheader. There was nobody in the freaking building on a Tuesday night. Does Steve Cohen think on a Wednesday afternoon, because of a Monday night rainout, you're going to pack the place? I mean, at least throw your suckers, I mean fans, a bone by giving them a traditional doubleheader, by giving them two for the price of one. I guess two for the price of one is torture. I remember the Colorado doubleheader. That was just, you talk about torture. You talk about abusing your fans. So maybe the Mets aren't being selfish. Maybe that's not what's happening. Maybe they realize it is too painful to make their fans sit through two games for the price of one. I digress. Make sure you've subscribed to the Rico Bronya. You'll never miss an episode. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on this drive home edition of Rico Bronya.